Hello there and welcome to this week's official EFL podcast. We have a returning co-host with bundles of EFL experience who knows a thing or two about a Welsh derby.
You know, the rivalries are everywhere, whether it's the North-South, whether it's Cardiff Swansea, whether it's Newport, whether it's cities, whatever it is, it's a big thing. And you do, when being Welsh, you do get that sense, you do get that feel, that pride of it. And then everyone comes together when the national side plays, and it's that type of thing.
We'll be chatting to a bona fide Wycombe Wanderers legend now leading the Chairboys from the dugout.
I really, really feel fortunate and lucky to be, you know, I'm not even a year into management now. You know, 31st September last year, I went to Colchester, and already I've had two separate jobs, so two sort of rebuilding in terms of what you want, two evolutions to take on, and I feel really fortunate to be sat in this seat and have this opportunity. I love my job. I've always wanted this opportunity.
And this week, 72 in 72 sees Watford boss Valerian Ismail take on football's ultimate task. It is the official EFL podcast. Joining us on the podcast this week, I should say rejoining us on the podcast this week as co-host after a stellar debut just a couple of weeks ago, it is a man that's been at Southend, that's been at Brighton, that's been at Yeovil, and also a couple of Spanish clubs, which I struggled to pronounce, hence the fact I didn't put them in my list, and also former manager of Luton, Stoke and Southampton. It's Nathan Jones. Nathan, how are we?
Oh, I'm good. How are you? That's the first time anyone's in my career of 30 odd years that anyone said I've had a stellar debut.
No, don't worry, mate. I could say something mean like it's low hanging fruit around here, but it's not. You were great. You've come back and I'm much appreciated for your time. We're going to start in League Two, flip it on its head this week. Now, a team that I've been conscious not to mention, partly because obviously they've had so much focus and emphasis over the course of their rise back into the Football League. But credit where credit's due, of course. They've won four on the bounce. Wrexham take on Stockport this weekend. It's one of the kind of headline games, really, that we're all kind of looking forward to. You're a Welshman. You're a very proud Welshman. What's your thoughts with Wrexham and the focus that they've had, their reflection on Welsh football, on the country as a whole? Is it as big, is it as wide-reaching as the documentary, as all the media coverage is making out?
I think it's a wonderful story, I really do. As you said, being a real Welsh football fan, because I grew up in an era where Wrexham was a big league club, you know, in terms of the teams that Brian Flynn days, Joey Jones days, all those things. You know, wonderful history with the football club, along with Merthyr Tydfil, Cardiff, Newport, Swansea, all those teams. It's you know, they've been out of the league too long, and it's a wonderful story. Two people, famous people, big hitters, for whatever reason they've done it, have created something special, really special. Not just the fact that they've reinvigorated the town, they've got people to buy in, they put Wrexham on a global map, and bearing in mind, it's never been that global before. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful story. And I do honestly believe, I always try to see the good in people, I honestly think it's a genuine story. I think they genuinely care about what they do. And I know, you know, I've worked with Ollie Lee, Elliot Lee and Ollie Palmer there, both played for me. And I know that they love it. They love the environment and everything. Plus, they've got a very experienced, good guy in terms of Phil Parkinson there. So I think it's a wonderful, wonderful story, and I'm really, really happy, not just because it's Welsh, but that they have really reinvigorated a town, a place that needed it.
And given, obviously, the size of the country compared to England, obviously, closest neighbours, regionally, having worked there, having played football around that particular country, there are idiosyncrasies around, aren't they? Just like there are, of course, in any country you go to. The rivalry between North and South, between the South Wales clubs, it's an absolute hotbed. I remember speaking to Gary Weaver, who's one of our wonderful commentators at Sky Sports, and he worked in Cardiff for quite a while. And that sense of the size of the football clubs that we're talking about, the size of the followings that we're talking about. Do you only really get your head around it when you work inside these particular football clubs? Because it's a proud place. It's a place that's following their football teams avidly. And it is a hotbed of footballing talent. You see, some of the players that have come out of Wales have been phenomenal, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. It's a massive, massive rivalry. I was fortunate enough to be at the game the other night, Cardiff Swansea, for example. And that has been, over the years, a real vicious rivalry and a real, you know, I don't mean that in a real negative way. I mean that in the best footballing sense in terms of some of the games they've had there. But then when I was growing up, you know, Wrexham were a, you know, north to south divide there. Even when Newport played Merthyr or Merthyr, and then there's the Welsh Cup. Then the Welsh Cup, then you could, you know, get into Europe, and teams like Merthyr played Atalanta in 1987 and took those to two games because it was, you know, there wasn't a group game and anything. Just wonderful history amongst the Welsh teams. But there is that, you know, the north-south divide, but they're everywhere. You know, the rivalries are everywhere, whether it's the north-south, whether it's Cardiff Swansea, whether it's Newport, whether it's cities, whatever it is, that's a big thing. And you do, when being Welsh, you do get that sense, you do get that feel, that pride of it. And then everyone comes together when the national side plays, and it's that type of thing. You're similar to Liverpool, Everton, you go Arsenal, Tottenham, whatever you do. But when England comes, you see them all mixing, and it's that real healthy rivalry that Wales needs.
It's exactly what football is all about, of course. Top of the table in League Two, Gillingham, Notts County behind them. Swindon, as I said, Wrexham in fourth. They've won four on the bounce. And as we mentioned, Stockport in 13th at the moment. They're unbeaten in three. It feels like they're rolling into the type of form that we presumed would be the case for a team that got to the playoffs last season. Right, into League One. And stick around, we've got Matt Bloomfield, the Wycombe Wanderers boss, joining us later on in the podcast. The Chairboys, again, another team that seems to be going through the gears and hitting some form off form. Another team in that similar vein. Portsmouth hit the top of League One for the first time in over a year, which as a stat, Nathan, does surprise me. But I suppose the lazy opinion on Portsmouth, if you are an outsider looking in, is big club in the wrong division, should be doing well. But as we know, in reality, it's not that easy, is it?
No, it never is. But let's say it's a big club, wonderful fan base. You know, I've been there in League Two, been there in League One, played against them in the Championship and stuff. And it's the same, pretty much same numbers, whichever division they're in, same vociferous support. And it's a wonderful atmosphere. And the ground, tight ground, real good footballing, you know, stadium. And it's good to see them back. Obviously, shouldn't quite say that as an ex-Southampton manager, but it is. It's a big club. It's good to see them. They're a good football club. You'd like to see those with the fan base, with everything they've been through and so on, you know, back in the higher divisions. And this may be the year. You know, they've changed. They've had a few managers. Kenny Jackie done well there. And I know Kenny very well. Obviously, Danny went in later. And now John is similar, I think, to Matty Broomfield in terms of a real good, had a real good career, being a leader, you know, PFA rep, yeah, in terms of stuff that he'd been a real logical choice, now taking that into management and had a good finish, you know, when he took over, had a real uplift in the football club and now has continued that and now they're top of the league. So I think it's a real good story unfolding there down on the south coast.
Climbing to the summit after beating Barnsley, Devante Cole, another player that's amongst the goals, of course, for the Tykes. Keep a keen eye on him. It certainly does run in the family, doesn't it, with his goal-scoring prowess. But an Albion turning over Port Vale, a Port Vale side that sit third in League One under Andy Crosby. It's a Burton side that are in the relegation places. Reading the manager's comments after the game, I mean, it strikes me potentially, Nathan, if you've had a good start to a season, a little hiccup like this, does that serve as a bit of a reality check with the greatest respect to a Burton? Because given their statistical placings, you'd presume a team in Port Vale full of confidence would turn over Burton, wouldn't you?
Well, look, it's a bit of a derby that, you know, geographically it's a little bit of a derby. I know Andy Crosby really well played with him at Brighton. Obviously, had a real good career as an assistant to Nigel Atkins. So doing a wonderful job there, having taken over from Darrow. Obviously, Dino at Burton, I don't want to be disrespectful in any way in terms of saying that, but, you know, because Nigel done a fantastic job, they got him to the Championship, that's when they believe they should be in terms of that. But in terms of the size of the club, in terms of how well the club's run, because I know it's a very, very well run club, then yeah, you'd think that a reality check might, not a reality check, but just a little bit of perspective or where, you know, where they really should be. But a wonderful win away at Port Vale is a very difficult place to go, you know, for lots and lots of reasons. Massive pitch, And as I said, a wonderful win, and especially when you haven't started brilliantly. And I watched them play Leicester, and they did quite well for periods in the mm-hmm. Leicester game. But a wonderful win away from home, because any win away from home is a good one in whatever league.
Keen eye on games across the division this weekend. Bolton taking on Peterborough. That feels like a big game, of course, in League One. Cambridge United taking on the aforementioned Port Vale. Carlisle against Derby. Charlton take on Wickham. As I said, Matt Bloomfield coming your way later on in the podcast. Right into the Championship we now go. It was a busy midweek, a full round of fixtures in midweek. Some surprising results, some ones that have gone specifically to form. Preston North End top of the Championship. We had Ryan Lowe on the other week on the podcast and managed to get a word in edgeways. You'll be very surprised to know, Nathan.
I was going to say, I thought you might need longer than an hour.
The job that he's doing, I mean, you've got obviously Leicester hot on the heels after their wonderful performances against both Southampton and Norwich City away. But the job that Ryan's doing, he played it down. He's very magnanimous. One game as it comes after the international break. Is it a Preston? I mean, and of course they won the game without the services of Will Keane, and a player that's obviously going to come back and light up the pitches he has done so far at Deepdale. Just a little touch on the job that Ryan's doing and Preston are doing, and can we see them there lasting the course?
Look, absolutely. I think there's a lot of sides will be looking at recent years and thinking, look, we can get in there. Now, they had a wonderful start last year, Preston. You know, if you remember, I think they kept seven clean sheets in the first seven games. They were really difficult to beat. They were right up there. This year, and then they subsequently fell away over 46 games. This year, I think they're better equipped. One, they got a stronger squad. Two, they'll have the experience from last year, plus all that continuity of the good work that Ryan does and his staff, because I know he's got good staff. Mike Marsh is you know, a real good coach, well-respected. I played with Marshy. So absolutely doing a wonderful job. Find out the other day, it's the only club never to be in the Premier League in terms of stuff, so there's real ambition there, and I know Ryan, you know, has real ambitions to take them there. Doing a fantastic job, know what they're doing, real experience right throughout. You only got to look at the, you know, Andrew Hughes. I had people like Liam Lindsay at Stoke with me, signed him. Alan Brown, who I think is one of the top Championship midfield players, has been for a while, and then this year they've got a little bit more goals in them, which probably cost them last year, and still got three strikers out. If you include Will Keane, include Risa, and you include Ched Evans, who's probably the most experienced one they've got. So, you know, the future's bright. They can come back in and they can hit the ground running. Then they've always had that solid base, you know, in terms of the experience and keeping clean sheets. But with more goals in the team now, I think they could maintain that.
So Leicester in action away at Norwich. Five changes Enzo Maresca made going into that game. He still had the chance to bring Kieran Dewsbury-Hall on off the bench, Jamie Vardy off the bench, Casey McAteer off the bench. I mean, the strength and depth of a squad such as that that does sit second. I think general consensus, a team that's come down from the Premier League in a slightly different manner to the likes of Southampton and Leeds, are we looking at the best collective squad in the Championship there that seems to be, again, working its way up to its full potential?
Yeah, look, I think them and Southampton, on paper, have two of the strongest squads in the division. I won't obviously comment on Southampton, but in terms of Leicester, I think two things. Yeah, there'd be expectation because of the strength of the squad and because of what they got. But what I think they, obviously the managers come in, really had a big impact on players, on the style, leading on from what Brendan had already laid there with the majority of them. But I think the big thing they've got there, one, they've recruited very, very well in terms of things like Mavididi, who's an excellent signing. But then they have stellar characters there. I know seven or eight of those players there, you know, personally, in terms of that. And they look at the squad. At times when teams come down from the Premier League, they get that hangover because some think that they're too good to be in the division. They think they're going to cruise it, and then they get shocked by the level. There's not there. Keenan Dewsbury-Hall, for example, Chowdhury, James Justin have all played at the level. Jamie Vardy, where he's played for England, he's been fantastic Premier League player. He came from non-league, came from Fleetwood, realises what it's like in the lower leagues, let alone a division down in the Championship. So all these have the character and the ability to have a real good push this year. And that's what I think Leicester have over most teams. They've got the talent, they've got the talented players, two, they've got the financial backing, but then I think they've got the characters that can see it through.
Key factor, of course, in any assault on the Championship is momentum. Certainly Ipswich have got that, sat in third in the Championship. Kieran's doing a wonderful job there down in Suffolk. Sunderland going great guns under Tony Mowbray. I'm sure he was very satisfied going back to Ewood Park and coming away with 3 points. Norwich we saw in defeat to Leicester. Hull City, Bristol City, Birmingham, and then Leeds down in ninth. Cardiff in tenth. Down at the bottom, there was a goal. There was a point apiece between Sheffield Wednesday and Borough. Swansea occupying the final relegation place. Now we must turn our attentions to Huddersfield Town. Huddersfield Town's next game is on Monday against Coventry, and as we well know, there's going to be a new man in the dugout. It sounds, as the fallout from this permeates through the media, that it's more Huddersfield Town's decision than it is Neil Warnock's. But he took charge of his 1,626th game in league management against Stoke City during the course of the week. He went out all smiles. He classed it as his one of his biggest achievements in football, keeping Huddersfield Town in the Championship at the end of last season. I don't know about you, Nathan, but the wave, it's au revoir, it's not goodbye, is it? That man will be somewhere come February or March. Do you feel that?
Absolutely. I think, look, it's in his blood. A brief thing on his career, obviously he's had an absolute stellar career. I don't think you and I could do it justice in terms of the words.
Over 40 years as a manager. Over 40
promotions.
Years
think,
as a manager.
I think
that
it's
seven.
I think it's seven promotions and countless campaigns that, you know, massive experience and I said fantastically well. Touching on just what he did at Huddersfield, look, having known what it was like to come back to a club on the brink of struggling and to get that uplift so quickly and over a period of time, did fantastically well to keep Huddersfield out, because they were bottom, they were struggling at the time for form, and he came instilled that belief, that winning mentality in them, and ultimately kept them up comfortably in terms of everything. Done a fantastic job. Then I think from his own volition, for his own decision, he wanted to carry on. And I think once you've done that well, I think you're in control then in terms of stuff. And then maybe all parties have chatted. I think Neil's been honest enough to say that he's had a chat with the club. The club maybe want to go down a different route or whatever. So I think he's experienced enough to know, he lives down on the in Devon in terms of that. Can he really then commit to doing all those things when you're thinking, well, look, this could be a short-term thing. So football's in his blood. Definitely not the last we'll see of Neil Warnock, but let's really congratulate him. One, on his career, it's been fantastic, but on the time he's had at Huddersfield, he's done fantastic well and lifted those to a place of real, real security. And I watched the game yesterday, and I said, real even game. Stoke, good side, spent a lot of money in terms of stuff, but really finished strong. And I thought they were going to give him the grandstand finish. They had a couple of little opportunities, a couple of counter attacks and stuff, and I thought they were going to give him the grandstand finish. That his tenure there definitely would have deserved.
Okay, we're going to take a little break now, and then Nathan's going to rejoin me in a little while to form a pincer movement on Wycombe Wanderers boss Matt Bloomfield. But in the interim, we're going to head over to Vicarage Road for our 72 in 72.
Hi, Valerie Ismail, and this is the 72 from 72. Watford, Barnsley, Sheffield Wednesday, Luton. No, not Luton. Can we make again? you can cut that. So again, Swansea, Coventry, Leicester, Southampton, Norwich, Rotherham, Swindon, Port Vale, Stevenage, Leighton Orient, the Championship, we have some more. Birmingham, West Brom, Leeds, Blackburn, Plymouth, Millwall. Stop.
So the general consensus being on the 72 in 72, it's not as easy as it sounds. Here's how we stand a few weeks into the season. Matt Smith leading the way at the top. John Coleman in second with 26. Mark Albrighton is there on 24. Liam Rossini just behind him on 23. Valerian Ishmael sandwiched somewhere in the middle on 19. Gary Rower 18. Stuart Dallas 17. And unfortunately, Aaron Ramsey propping up the table with 13. Okie dokie, joining us now on the official EFL podcast, it's been myself and Nathan so far, but now we've got the Wycombe Wanderers boss, not just the Wycombe Wanderers boss, but club legend, I think it's safe to say, Matt Bloomfield. Matt, thank you so much for joining us, mate. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you doing, guys? You well?
We're good. Now, we've just started recording. We always have a little bit of a chat before we start recording, and Nathan came quite forcefully with his opinion on playing Wycombe Wanderers, playing Adams Park, and playing against your good self. So, Nathan, just fill us in on the unique experience that is playing against Wycombe.
With all the respect in the world, it's a tough place to go. Always have been, you know, ever since I took over. Guys probably took over slightly earlier than I did, I think. But we've had some monumental battles. You know, the year they went up, they were difficult to beat. And then every year, you know, we've had real tough battles. When you go there, you know where you're going to get. Your man for man in midfield. There's no space. You can't play. You want to play fluently in terms of that. But it's not, and just brilliant. And right from the moment you arrive off the bus to the moment me and Gaz have a beer after, it was always one of the most difficult places to go. And our guest today is right up there with the nuisances that we used to come up with, where he used to be, you know, magnificent in terms of his 12-13k, and we knew that we were always in for the most difficult games when we went there.
Does that ring a bell, Matt, from your end of the equation? Is that what the MO has always been in your time at Wycombe, both as a player and now as the boss?
Yeah, I think it evolved to that, I guess. It was certainly a rivalry that we had with Luton over a few years where, you know, both teams were competing to try and get out the top of the league, and it almost provided with really unique games each season. And it's really interesting to hear, you know, opposition views, and obviously we came up against Nathan's teams quite a bit, and it's really interesting to hear that. We pride ourselves on our togetherness and our work rate. Obviously it's what, you know, Gaz stands for and what he stands for. And as a football club, I think it's come synonymous with who we are. And it's one of the things I've tried to keep because, you know, with a change of management, especially after someone leaving after such a long period of time, there's inevitably change and evolution. But I still wanted to retain those core values of who we are as a football club. And I think that's certainly one of the things we want to retain is that, you know, people don't enjoy coming to Adams Park. We make it tough and we want to make sure we're in your faces and playing on the front foot. So I hope that in years to come, people will say that about my teams as much as people have said that about Gaz's team.
That I'm interested in that dynamic because for such a long period of time, and it always struck me as, I was going to say lazy journalism, but I'm going to ask you a similar question and then move on if that's okay. That shadow, I say shadow, Gareth Ainsworth, we all know him, we all love him to bits. He's such a wonderful, unique human being. Was at that wonderful football club for such a long period of time. And it was very much made in his image, a former teammate of yours, a former roommate of yours, a former boss of yours. So that was there. That stands for posterity. At some stage, it moves on. Gaz moves on. The Matt Bloomfield era begins. How much do you take of that, learning from a man such as that? But then for the longevity of your career, it needs to have your blueprint, Matt, doesn't it? It needs to be your team, your football club. How do you appreciate what's gone before with stepping forward as well?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I always told Gaz that I would never try and follow him because I felt like it was a real tough task to follow someone who's had continued success for 10 years seemed like a ridiculous idea. I think the best thing I did was take the opportunity to go to Colchester for five months and really, one, prove to myself and those around me that I knew that I could do this job, but I wanted to go and stand on my own two feet. I didn't want to get be sat in this seat off the back of any kind of the fact that I've been here, or loyalty, and been in the place for too long. I wanted to make sure I went out and proved to myself and the owners that I was ready to take this job. And I guess it's everything I say is with the utmost respect to Gaz and the area that I played in, because I loved every moment of it. But there has to be change, and I have to make sure that this team now represents me and who I am and my staff now. So inevitably that does come with change. But it's about taking what you believe was right and trying to mould the bits that you want to slightly change. And we're trying to do that. We had to have a big overhaul of the playing squad over the summer because of contract lengths and the age of the squad, a couple of injuries that we'd been carrying. And I think there was probably more change that happened than I kind of envisaged going into the summer. But off the back of that was a real freshness of the group, a real freshness of the squad. You know, I changed office at the changing ground. We redecorated a little bit because I wanted there to be a fresh feeling about the place, because it was a new era. And it's now my era and our era. And whilst I loved every moment of playing for Gaz, he's moved on to a new job, and we need to make sure that as a football club, we're ready to move forward as well.
Two things stand out for me really with Matt when he got the job. One, I totally agree that time that you went to Colchester and stuff would have, because nothing prepares you for being a manager until you're a manager. Like where respect you are, a captain, a leader, wherever, until you are the decision maker, until you are the one on the front line, nothing prepares you. And then from the outside looking at it, it was the most logical appointment. You know, Gaz had done wonderfully well. It's a special club, special environment, created on something, you know, not financial based in any way. And to continue that and to continue every good thing, it really did take someone who knew it, someone that, you know, was brought up in it, someone that embraced it, and someone was a big part of it. And I thought, it just personally, as soon as I heard that appointment, I thought, what a really good logical appointment.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we really actually felt we were onto something special at Colchester. We had just got my first manager of the month. We'd gone won five away games in a row. We felt like we were onto something good, and by no means was I looking to leave. Absolutely not. We really enjoyed our time there. But as soon as the call came from Rob, I was given permission to speak to Rob about coming back. It just made sense. I must admit, the end of last season was really tough emotionally and psychologically, trying to take over a group that was so moulded in one manager and trying to put your own stamp on it whilst trying to keep the continuity. That was a tough period of time. But like you say, Nathan, I really believed in the opportunity that Rob was giving me. I love this place. I love the supporters. I love the fact that we stand for stuff. We stand for the morals and the values that we live our lives by, and the way we conduct ourselves. And, you know, I was really energised and enthusiastic and couldn't wait to come back and get on with that job. And obviously, you know, every day I wake up in Suffolk and set the early alarm, get in the car and meet the coaching staff on the way. And we just talk shop the whole way in, and we love what we're doing, and we really hope we can do a good job here.
So the here and now being off the back of the end of last season, Matt, flirting obviously with the playoff places, not quite making it, moving into this, you talk about the change in personnel and some of the old boys sticking around as well, the likes of Joe Jacobson and Sam Vokes, and bringing newer players in such as Freddie Potts on loan from West Ham. The chemistry that you've got at the moment, currently sat where you are, ninth in Sky Bet League One, it seems like you said there's been a change of personnel in the summer, but you've had a chance to, whether it is bringing a new player in here or there, or reaffirming what you want from the more elder statesman in the squad. Is the chemistry just right for you at the moment? Are you getting or building towards getting the max out of these players?
Yeah, I don't think any evolution is linear. There's going to be bumps along the roads. There's going to be highs and lows. I think the first two league games of the season certainly showed how tough this league is. But we knew that we had a really bitty pre-season. We had a lot of injuries. You know, some of the younger boys you mentioned there, who we joined on loan, came late in pre-season, so we were very disjointed at the start of the season. And the reason we did our recruitment as we did was a couple of things. I had a long chat with the owner over the summer, and we've been chasing the championship since we've been out of it, and we wanted to make sure we lived our lives here within the means that we possibly could as a football club. You know, we don't have the biggest attendance. We have to live within our means, and my care and love for this football club means that I would always put the club first and foremost in that. So we had agreement off the back of that. And the recruitment over the summer was to complement the senior players we already had. I really felt that they've, you know, the boys that we already had here, you're talking about Vokesy, GMAC, JJ, Jack Grimmer, David Wheeler, you know, these guys are just, you know, they're just incredible people, first and foremost. I love them to bits. They're absolutely great, and they've got so much to give. But we really felt as a coaching staff that to complement those boys was to bring in some younger legs around them.
Don't worry. That is Nathan Jones's faithful assist. That's not the noise that Jonesy makes when he gets excited. Nah,
thinking about those games against Gaz again. Yeah
it's just, that's Paul Hart. That is, he just wants he just has to get up.
Yeah, no, so we just felt that we needed to, you know, add that sort of younger energy and enthusiasm around the seniority of the knowledge and the experience we have here. And we felt that if we could do that, we could have a really, you know, cohesive group that complemented each other. So, you know, two things to probably mention is, one, it's certainly not out with the old, in with the new. It's absolutely not that. But it's just about trying to be as clever as we could with our recruitment over the summer to get a group that we really felt, you know, League One is a running league. It's a really mobile, fit league, and we really felt that we wanted to have the young enthusiasm around the know-how and the knowledge that we have already in the building, and we're trying to strike that balance as much as we possibly can.
Matt, the way you talk about Wickham, it's a wonderful thing to listen to. The genuine love and affection that you've got for a place that's, it's been mutually beneficial professionally, of course. You've both got a lot out of each other over the course of your respective time there in your career. I'm intrigued. Is there anything? Obviously, this is me just thinking a reversal of us getting you on the pod to ask you questions. You asking questions of someone like Nathan. You talk about being in management for just less than a year. You've seen Nathan as managed around the Football League and in the Premier League so far. If we had someone else on who's been in the game for 20 years as a manager, I'm sure Nathan's got questions for a manager such as that. It really does intrigue me, because sitting this side of the fence and not really having the nerve or the time to go into coaching and management and just playing a bit safe, to be honest, and being able to spend time with lovely fellas like yourselves, I'm so intrigued, because this managerial career, it'll have its ups, it'll have its downs. I mean, I'll come to you first, Nathan. Any words of wisdom to bestow upon my early doors in this? Any pitfalls to look out for? Because as you quite rightly say, you only learn about management when you become a manager. You can do your badges, you can do all your training, you can see everything, you can garner all your experience. But until you're stood there on the dugout taking everything, you don't know what it is, do you?
No, we don't. Look, ironically, we got in touch with each other actually when Matt got the job, and we got good people in common and things. I mean, firstly, look, your family life and your sleep suffers when you're a manager. Those are the two things really that you do. They, from being a player,
Matt's nodding along knowingly.
Yeah, when you get your 8-9 hours a day, your little afternoon sleeps and stuff like that. Look, that kind of lifestyle goes out the window. But it's something that, you know, someone like Matt has been a leader, so it was a natural progression for him. But look, there are certain things you can do. I met good people. I met Sam Allardyce. I met people like that and gleaned from those, Tony Pulis and things. Managers who've been in the game with longevity. I got Paul Hart close to me, so it was real big help to me. But you know, Matt's doing a great job. He's had a real good start. Obviously, it's been a meteoric rise in terms of getting a job and then getting a job quickly from there, but he would have earned that opportunity. One thing you have to do is, one, enjoy it, two, stick to your principles. And then it's just finding a way to handle the pressure and everything, because it consumes your life. It changes your life, but it consumes your life every day. As I said, nice little journey in with your staff and things like that. All day then you're there. If you can find that work balance and stuff, because I didn't have it when I started. I wasn't at 14 hours a day, no work balance, no family life, just dedicated, tunnel vision to try and get there. And right up to even now till I left Southampton, and it's only now that I'm getting a real perspective on family life, on certain things I can do, on looking after my own health and stuff like that by running and doing all those things. And you have to have that balance. It's just when you're in it, when you're consumed by it, when it's results-based, when you are driven, and when you want to just drive a group of people on, it's difficult to do that.
Yeah, difficult stroke impossible. I think it's you know, I get up at 4:15, leave Suffolk and get in and work and get here and work, because I just think that, well, one, we want to avoid the M25 at peak time. That's probably the main reason. But I think when something means as much to you as this opportunity does to me, and Nathan, the way he speaks, one of the reasons I reached out through a mutual friend to Nathan is I've always admired his teams and loved the battle against them, and how Nathan built a career, you know, with Luton, and really kind of built a persona and a career where you can go on and take big jobs. And that's one of the reasons, as soon as I got the Colchester job, I reached out and just said, you know, he's someone who I wanted to speak to. So it's ironic that Nathan's on the podcast, because it's someone who I wanted to reach out to and go, how did you do it? Why did you do it? You know, and what steps can you help me with to go on the same, you know, a similar career path? Because, you know, we're all ambitious people. We want to be successful, and we want to make sure that we, you know, can provide for our families. You know, my wife and girls mean the world to me. And one of the opportunities of this job is to try and provide a better future for them. So, you know, I think that it's all part of the bigger picture of what drives you every single morning to get up. First and foremost, it's, you know, I want to provide the best sporting environment that these boys could possibly be in. That's my driver, the cultural, that, you know, the philosophy based, the way we play, the way we give them information, the way they're, you know, the training, all of it. If I can give them, or provide with my staff, the best footballing environment they can have, then I believe that success comes off the back of it. So they're your drivers, and they get you up and they get you feeling alive and ready to go to work. So it's interesting, and I find it fascinating listening to Nathan, because anytime you hear him interviewed or on a podcast, you know, he speaks with that passion, and I just love it.
Plus, he's got the yappy little dog as well at his feet to make sure that it keeps us all on our toes. It's amazing to hear, and this is, like I said, this is a real treat of my job, that kind of fraternal, because as you say, there's only a finite amount of jobs out there, Matt, and there's many a manager that we speak to, and managers that aren't in jobs are just in between jobs. That's the way I've found it, and that's kind of, it gives, as Nathan's spoken about, maybe that work-life balance which you take then into the next job that you get. And Matt, I presume the challenge to you is to stick to those principles as the seasons roll on, as the games come thick and fast, as the ups and downs come your way with regards to potentially how Wickham get on at the end of this season. Let's just turn it back to Wickham to finish off, and this season in particular, given that disappointment about missing out on the playoffs, is that, as a group, as a collective, your kind of your baseline, what you want, at least the playoffs come the end of the season?
Yeah, I'm not really the guy that comes and makes public kind of predictions or anything like that. I'm going to have to be really boring on this one, I'm afraid, Pratt. So I think that, as I said earlier on, as a football club, we have to make sure that, first and foremost, the club's in the healthiest position it could possibly be. We had to make sure that we recruited the best we possibly can. We're really proud of the job we did over the summer in terms of the recruitment. We've got some top young players here on loan that we're really grateful to have from some Premier League clubs. You know, couple that in with a couple of our own young players and those senior boys, we're really pleased to have the group. It's how quickly we can make sure the group comes together as a strong unit. We're really pleased with the work we've done so far, but we've got a really tough game at Charlton on Saturday that, you know, Michael Appleton's, you know, obviously a really experienced manager who's done a great job over a number of years. So, you know, we just have to literally just take one step at a time. You know, my first ambition was to get to a year in management. I'm nearly there. Then it'll be to complete a full season. So, you know, I think you have to set yourself little targets day by day. And as a group, we want to be getting better. We, in-house, we have our own hopes and ambitions, but we don't believe that the right way as a group is to make that too public at this time. And we just, you know, approach every game and see where the season takes us. We really hope that we can have an exciting time this year.
Well, Matt, I mean, this has been an absolute pleasure, mate. Watching the pivot from yourself of player to coach, manager, boss, all the different hats you've got to wear being in charge of a football club has been an absolute pleasure. And listening to you two chat as well, it's been a real highlight of the pod so far this season. So a big thank you to both. Nathan, a thank you to you, first and foremost, for joining us as co-host this week on the EFL podcast.
No worries, Pratt. It's good to be here. And Matt, all the best on the weekend. I'm actually contemplating your game, so I could actually be there.
Gents, lovely stuff. A pleasure
Thanks
to chat
on,
to you
guys.
Both.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okie dokie, well, that's it for another episode of the official EFL podcast. My big thanks to Matt Bloomfield, Valerian Ishmael for his 72 in 72, and the wonderful Welshman rejoining me as co-host. It was, of course, Nathan Jones. As always, if you've enjoyed it, and I sincerely hope you have, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share on all of your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. Listen up, that's podcast podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton, and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.